Time for this week's podcast recommendation. Check out On the Media with Brooke Gladstone and Bob Garfield from WNYC. It helps you figure out what to make of all the information that gets hurled into your face every day in this crazy world we call home. It'll make you smarter. Listen to On the Media wherever you get your podcasts or through the WNYC app. WNYC, this is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. You know, when you share a communal fridge in an office or in an apartment, your philosophy about how that fridge should be used says a lot about how you think society should function. How should resources be allocated? How much individual liberty should we each have? When should big government intervene? And, you know, as with these timeless questions, with communal fridges, there's a lot of disagreement. Here's Shane in Syracuse, New York.
First off, I think if you leave your condiments, your dressing, ketchup, mustard, barbecue sauce, whatever, if you leave it in the fridge or, you know, on the counter overnight while you're not at work, you're essentially giving other people permission to use it. Now, I've used other people's condiments in the past and other people have used mine. However, when they use too much of it, I think that's unacceptable. I think it's okay to use other people's condiments, but I don't think that you should use them as if they were your own. Like, I'm not going to bring my dressing today for my salad because, you know, I know Stevenson leaves his Hidden Valley Ranch at work.
I do like what you said, that you should not bring in dressing because you know someone else brings it in. But when you say don't take too much, what's too much? One man's drizzle is another man's dollop.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. But, you know, I'll put it this way. If I went in the next day and my condiment or dressing was noticeably, you know, lower, like I didn't mark a line on it, but if it was noticeably lower, I would have a problem with it.
Have you ever left your ketchup or whatever in your office fridge and had enough people take enough of it that you came back to it and found it empty?
Well, here's this happened to me, okay? I was having meatloaf that week, so I left my ketchup at work, and every day I'd use some ketchup. And I don't use a ton of it, but by Friday, I noticed that almost three-quarters of this bottle of ketchup was gone. So I took the ketchup home with me, and before I left, I just made a little paper sign, and I set it up in that cupboard, and it said, "No more ketchup for you." Someone was abusing that ketchup. They were really loading up on it, you know?
Isn't it possible that nobody was abusing the ketchup, that just a large number of people in your office were all following your rule to take only a small, respectful amount altogether, then it would have removed a lot? What do you say to that?
Right. Well, that may have happened, but on my rule, using my rule, I accepted that, and I took the ketchup home. I didn't cause a stink.
But you left a snarky note.
Well, I'm a snarky person, Dan. I love snark, you know.
Right, but you were peeved. You were peeved about what had happened to your ketchup.
I felt used, Dan.
Okay, but you felt used by participating in the exact system that you endorse.
The world is an ugly place, you know, and the break rooms are the ugliest. You know, it's not a perfect system, but it's the one in which I live by.
Well, so now we get into the big picture, which is really, what are the societal implications of this kind of an approach to a communal fridge? Are you arguing for sort of a less government is more libertarian, sort of every person for themselves, we don't need any rules, we'll police the situation ourselves situation? Or are you more arguing for like a kumbaya commune kind of an approach where we share everything all together as one?
I think a nice place, Dan, would be somewhere in the middle, because I like neither of those options. Okay. You know, I got bitten in that ketchup incident, but I won't get bitten again. And my condiments, I truck to and from work every day, and therefore I'm also never using anyone else's.
And oh, so you've withdrawn from the system.
Well, the system still exists. I'm just not going to be part of it.
Oh, so you're Ted Kaczynski.
Yeah,
I've actually now you're in a barn. You're off the grid completely. This is a big development. Well, Shane in Syracuse, good luck off the grid, man.
Thanks, Dan.
Now, I can already hear some of you. I know that many of you out there probably think Shane's system is totally bonkers. You say taking someone else's food from a communal fridge without asking is always wrong, no matter what. And Julie in Daytona Beach, Florida agrees. She said most of the time, if you ask first, she's happy to share. But you better ask first.
If you give me notice that you have used my food or my condiment, I know at least it's being depleted. The worst feeling is you go in there to go get whatever the thing is, and it's not there. And then your lunch is like only 50% as good as it would have been. And not only that, I mean, I decide to make a, you know, reasoned purchase of some sort of special condiment, i.e. some special salsa, and I'm like, I don't want to share that. So that I would have said no if anybody asked.
I got to stop you there, Julie. I do think that at a certain point, if you're bringing high-end specialty or even if not expensive, at least especially beloved or especially rare foods into the office, then, you know, you shouldn't put them in the communal fridge. You know, like
even if they have your name on it?
I mean, you know, how many people work in your office?
Probably like 50.
Okay, so some of those people you probably don't know so well. Would you leave your prized salsa out in front of your house? You know, would you leave it next to your mailbox? Would you leave it on the front seat of your car with your car unlocked? I mean, like, at a certain point, if something is that valuable to you, I think that you need to, if you think it can't go a few hours without being refrigerated, then bring in a cooler bag and keep it at your desk.
Yeah, that's kind of impractical. And, you know, I have to say that people do leave valuables in their unlocked cars all the time. As a matter of fact, people leave their cars running.
Well, but and when they do that and their car gets stolen, don't you feel like they were kind of asking for it?
No. That's my whole point. Dan, this is my whole point. We have to be stewards of our world, and we have to not take things that clearly belong to others. If you see a car that has the keys in it, you shouldn't be thinking, oh, I can take that. You should be thinking, that's not mine. I won't take it.
Well, look,
I
agree that you shouldn't steal cars. Just for the record,
right.
kids out there, don't steal cars. But we all know that there are always going to be bad people out there who are going to do bad things. And at a certain point, like, there is some onus on you to protect yourself from, you know, the evil forces of the world. But let's say everyone in the office was just like you. They all are people who put thought into what they like to eat. They have, I mean, you're keeping butter, multiple dressings and salsas and, you know, a lot of good stuff in the fridge.
Yes, and olives.
Olives, too. Olives. Okay, so what would happen if all 50 people in the office put as much food in the fridge as you put in there?
So you're saying it's like economy.
It would not, like, be the most efficient way to use the communal fridge. Food would probably go to waste because many people don't need a whole stick of butter. They just want a little bit, and then it might go bad, or their salsa would go bad because they only wanted a little bit of a dip.
I think if we all, like, had a condiment list and all contributed money, that would be fine, or if we lived in a commune. But it seems to me that the people that are always taking it and not telling you who they are people who never contribute.
But isn't that true with the whole world, Julie? I mean, most people are nice people who are going to ask before taking your salsa. There's always going to be a few bad apples who eat half your salsa or steal your car that you left running in the parking lot. But just because that's the case doesn't mean that you should take your food out of the fridge, take your salsa, and go home. You know, I mean, I think you just got to continue to live your life and, you know, and do your best to avoid the bad people without letting it bring you down.
I do actually agree with that. And I don't live in fear of fridge theft because I do have shelf-stable snacks in my desk.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're prepared.
Thank you.
All right, Julie in Daytona Beach, Florida, thanks so much for your call.
Such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much.
So Julie sees this issue in black and white. Coming up, Andrew in Wisconsin sees shades of gray. He actually thinks there are times when eating someone else's food out of a communal fridge is a public service. Plus, we'll hear about the truly extreme measures some people have gone to stop office fridge theft. And when some leftover pad thai goes missing, a grown man is reduced to tears. Stay with us. Hey friends, I want to tell you about one of my favorite podcasts in the world. It's called On the Media. It's hosted by Brooke Gladstone and Bob Garfield right here at WNYC. And it's not some insider-y media industry kind of show, not at all. It's really about what we should make of all the information that just gets hurled into our faces every day. And you know, what I really love about Brooke and Bob is that they give all sides a fair hearing, but at the same time, they let their personalities and their perspectives shine through. It is a great show. Listen to On the Media wherever you get your podcasts or through the WNYC app. Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC. I'm Dan Pashman. If you haven't already heard last week's show, please make sure you check that one out. It's a parody of the hit podcast Serial, and in it, we investigate the true story of a series of office fridge food thefts that took place at a call center in Elkhart, Indiana in 2001. A lot of people are tweeting me they don't believe it's a true story. It's just that shocking. But I'm serious. It really is a true story. Also, by the way, in that show, another thing that's true is the part when I tell you that we need your support to keep the Sporkful going. For just $3 a month, you can get a cool WNYC potholder. For $10 a month, get a signed copy of my book. No amount too big or small. We really need your help. Please donate today at sporkful.com/support. And thank you. All right, back to the show. Here's Andrew in Madison, Wisconsin, with his take on communal fridge etiquette.
There's stuff in there that you are pretty sure that a roommate has forgotten about. Now everybody is basically having to sacrifice some of their fridge real estate because you're leaving your leftover casserole in there and not eating it. So my philosophy is that if a food is in there that a roommate has forgotten about, it's fair game. You're doing everyone sort of a public service.
And you're doing a public, you think it's a public service partly because you're clearing space, you're saying, and also partly because you're making use of a food that otherwise probably would have ended up getting thrown out. Is that right?
Totally, yeah.
So the first and sort of most obvious question here, Andrew, with this philosophy is, how can you be sure that that food would have gone bad had you not eaten it?
I think it's sort of paradoxical because like the foods that are going to go bad most quickly are like your fresh produce. But the problem with that is you can't really take that because it's not been in the fridge long enough where you can be certain that a roommate or a coworker will have forgotten about it. So you're better off going for things that are semi non-perishable, like a apricot jam or something like that, where it could sit in the back of the fridge for a month and it wouldn't go bad. You could also sort of test the waters and see if anybody's actually using that. I'll sort of arrange the jar of jelly in the back of the fridge so that, like, say, the nutrition label is facing in a particular direction. And then I'll go back a few days later or a week later and check if it's been moved from that position. And if it hasn't been moved at all, I can be pretty certain that nobody's using it.
You're right that it's possible that you could use up your roommate's apricot jam. And they would have, the reason why it's been sitting back there is they forgot they even have it. You use it up. They never noticed that you use it up because they forgot it was there in the first place. So they're not, unhappy. They don't feel like they've experienced a loss because they forgot what they had. But if you were to go to them and said, oh, by the way, I just finished all your apricot jam and it was delicious.
That'd be a problem.
Okay.
I do feel conflicted about it. Because on the one hand, I know that what I'm doing is harmless, and in fact, it may be even a small public service by freeing up fridge space. So I'm careful. But on the other hand, I know that this is a social faux pas in principle, so I don't advertise it.
Well, it's interesting, Andrew. I have to tell you because I'm not totally persuaded that you are acting all that altruistically, to be honest. It sounds like what you're doing is you just really want to eat the food and you're reverse engineering a justification for it. Now, that doesn't necessarily make you a bad person. I mean, our founding fathers set up our entire government on the premise that people are selfish, They want to act in their own self-interest, and we need to find a way to make that self-interest work for the greater good.
Mm-hmm.
And your argument is basically, really what you're saying is that you're acting selfishly, but in the process, that there's a societal good is the byproduct of your pursuit of your own self-interest. Is that fair to say?
I think that's probably a pretty good way to put it.
So you're an Adam Smith guy. Free market all the way. That's what I'm hearing from you, Andrew. Free market. I think that really what it comes down to at the end of the day is knowing the people you share the fridge with very well. Because to make an accurate judgment about what you can eat without causing harm to others, you need to not only know the foods, but also know the people.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And so that brings up a good point, actually, because there are certain roommates that I've had where I would never do this with, because I know that they're conscious about the food that they have. There are other roommates who go on a $300 shopping spree and bring home bags of food and could never possibly eat it all. So it does depend on the person.
Well, you must have a pretty good read on people if you've never pissed anybody off. I will say that.
Yeah, I really haven't.
All right, Andrew in Madison, Wisconsin, thanks for your call.
Hey, thank you.
So, eaters, I want to hear from you. When you put a condiment in a communal fridge, is it fair game? Or is taking someone else's stuff always wrong, no matter what? Take our poll at sporkful.com. There's one thing I've learned collecting all your stories of office fridge theft is that no one is safe. Even here at WNYC, you may think, oh, public radio, it's very touchy-feely, very warm and fuzzy. And it is. I mean, to give you an idea, my old producer, Kristen, she got a delivery from her CSA, bag full of fresh produce on her desk. She notices a ladybug crawling around in a leaf of lettuce. She escorted the ladybug on the elevator, brought it down from the 8th floor to set it free on the street. This is where I work. But even here, we have office fridge theft. My friend Sarah Montague produces the excellent fiction series Selected Shorts. Just the other week, she sent this email to the staff.
Subject line, wicked. The name of the hot chocolate from Jacques Torres I was making yesterday in the kitchen. And also, I am sorry to say, the term for the unkind person who has made off with the tin. I'd be happy to share, but it would be nice to have been given the choice. Peeved, Sarah.
All right, first off, is there anything Sarah Montague could say that wouldn't sound lovely? I mean, she could read the ingredients in a ketchup packet, and I would listen to it all day long. But, you know, every time I told anyone here at WNYC that I was working on a show about office fridge food theft, first thing every single person said was, are you going to talk about the kombucha fairy? Kombucha, in case you don't know, is this hipstery, hippy-dippy, fermented beverage that tastes kind of like rancid mushrooms and toe cheese. It claims to provide a whole bunch of health benefits. I don't think there's much science behind most of them, but I still believe all those claims because no one would drink something this disgusting if it wasn't really, really good for you. Karen Havlick produces New Sounds, a podcast from the folks who do Soundcheck here at WNYC, and she loves her some kombucha. Someone swiped one of her bottles. She took to the all-staff email.
Tuesday, May 15th, 2012. Subject, Kombucha Synergy Trilogy. Non-alcoholic. Missing from 9th floor fridge. Whoever liberated my Synergy kombucha drink from the 9th floor fridge sometime today in the past 5 hours, I certainly hope that you plan to replace it. Just because my Sharpie wouldn't write on the wet glass bottle doesn't make it fair game. I hope that you do not achieve the re-energizing that you sought, and that the bottle exploded on you and your clothes as you opened it.
Now, at least one kind soul at WNYC took pity on Karen and brought her homemade kombucha anonymously. That person was known as the kombucha fairy. But Karen's store-bought kombucha kept getting stolen. Her emails escalated. Here's number 3.
I do not go shopping and transport the potentially explodey kombuchas here for you. They are for me to enjoy. A fizzy lift to my afternoon. So, trilogy is your favorite flavor? Mine too! You know, maybe you could bring your own. They are not inexpensive items, as you must know. And this is now number 3 to go missing with my name on the bottle. Whoever you are, I certainly hope that you are overrun with probiotics to the extent that you get thrush mouth from having binged on my kombuchas. Also, you ought to know that I've been dubbed the person most likely to kick someone's ass by a member of senior management who shall remain anonymous. This is the last time, however, and my new favorite flavor is Maki Berry Mint. I'll not be so careless as to leave one of those for you to steal.
Are you still as angry? I mean, like talk now. Today's Karen. Talk to the kombucha thief. What do you want to say today?
Oh, well, that I've taken great pains to put all sorts of hair and body parts and fluids of mine all over any of my food. If you ever see it labeled in the fridge, you don't know the risks you're taking. Got it?
So it sounds like you're totally over it.
Oh, yeah. I'm the kind to forgive, forget, move on. Oh, yeah. Put that right away.
Yeah. Thanks, Karen.
You bet.
Karen never caught her thief. She had to stop storing her kombucha in the fridge. So her emails were hilarious, but ineffective. Evan in Seattle recommends a different approach. He says a friend of his had trouble with people using up his vinaigrette.
He took a selfie of himself with his tongue inside the opening of the bottle. And then he printed that out and just taped it onto the front of the bottle. So no note, no name, no polite request, just a picture with his tongue in the bottle. And people quit taking his vinaigrette.
Another option for you fridge food theft victims comes from producer Ann Sani. A friend of hers was having trouble with some food theft in a communal fridge. She put a tampon into her food. She never had an issue again. When I asked you for your stories of office fridge theft, I really wanted to hear from some perpetrators. Not just people who had like an ideological justification for it. I mean, I wanted to hear from people who were just flat out guilty. Clay in Detroit called in with this story.
One time I was working super late one night, middle of the night, 2 a.m. I get crazy hungry. So I go down to the fridge downstairs and there was this carton of pad thai, and I love pad thai, cold, hot, old, new.
Did you know right away whose pad thai it was?
I had no clue.
To be clear though, Clay, when you ate it, you knew you were eating someone else's food.
Yeah, it was definitely not mine, which I guess like in the moment I was so hungry I didn't think about that. I didn't think about the fact that someone had left it behind and maybe was looking forward to it the next day, which kind of brings me into the next part of the story.
You finish your work, you go home and sleep for a couple of hours. I assume you come back into work the next morning, and what happens?
So I come into work, and I'm sitting at my desk, and I'm working, and my boss kind of, you know, it's kind of like an open area, so he kind of opens the fridge, and he yells up to the upstairs and all around the office, and he's like, hey, has anyone seen my pad thai that I left in the fridge yesterday? And I'm sitting there, I'm like, so I said, I'm so sorry. And he's like, why did you do that? And I was like, I'm so sorry, I was hungry. And he's like, he ended up saying to me, I'm really disappointed. I was looking forward to eating this today. And so I just felt even more terrible.
So your boss calls you in. He's kind of interrogating you. You're also severely sleep deprived at this point.
Right. I'm like emotional. Like, I'm pretty sure I cried. It just kind of like, I remember like a few tears coming out of my eyes. And I'm just like, I can't believe that. Like, I'm crying over some pad thai, even though pad thai is completely delicious.
And how long ago was this?
This would have been, like, 3 years ago.
Okay, so in the past 3 years, how has your approach to communal fridges changed as a result of this experience?
So, growing up as a kid in my home, I had three sisters. There was an agreement that you had to write your name on the takeout carton. And it was fair game after 24 hours.
That was a rule? That was like a known rule in your house?
That was a known rule. And what I later discovered after talking with my family was that I know that this rule was developed because of me. What brought me to that was I recently got married, and my wife and I would go out to eat, and then I would eat the leftover pad thai that she had ordered. And then she comes home, hey, have you seen my pad thai? I'm like, oh, I ate that. And she said, I was really looking forward to that. I'm like disappointed. I really wanted that. And then I realized, I'm a food thief. Like, I think I have a problem.
Okay, so a couple things here, Clay. First of all, I just want to confirm then that despite the embarrassment and horror you felt at having eaten your boss's pad thai and then breaking down crying in front of him,
yeah,
you learned nothing from that experience.
Okay, I mean...
That's the first thing I'm taking from this, yeah. Right? Has your wife ever taken your pad thai?
No, she has not.
Well, that's the answer. You know, I think that you need to learn empathy. You want to understand. I know your heart's in the right place, but it sounds like you don't fully understand how it feels when you're looking forward to eating pad thai and you're thinking about it all day or all night and you wake up in the morning or you come home from work and it's gone.
You're right.
It's a terrible feeling. I think that I want your wife to take your pad thai once without asking, and I don't want you to plan it. It's got to be when you're not expecting it, when you're looking forward to it, okay? And she's got to ambush you, and she gets one free pad thai theft with no repercussions and no retaliation on your part.
Maybe this is the intervention. Maybe I needed to hear from you that this is a serious problem. I hope that this goes well for me.
Yeah.
I hope that I learn better communal fridge etiquette through this.
Clay in Detroit, you better watch out for your pad thai.
It's going to be missing very soon.
That's right. And don't ever come over to my house. Next week on The Sporkful, our series on office eating continues. I'll talk to some guys who used a Freedom of Information request to expose the contents of the cafeteria suggestion box at the CIA. And I don't mean the Culinary Institute of America. I mean the place with the spies. And let me tell you, the suggestions are amazing.
I noticed the previous brewed iced tea dispensers have been replaced with different dispensers with pipes coming out of the back. This new tea tastes terrible. Please consider reinstating the previous dispensers or with something that brews tea close by. Thank you. By and large, the cafeteria does an excellent job.
That's next week. Remember to check out last week's very special episode of The Sporkful. It's a true crime investigation of a shocking story of office fridge food theft. And please remember to support The Sporkful. We really do need your help. Go to sporkful.com/support. And thank you. This show is a production of WNYC and The Sporkful. It's produced by Ann Sani and me. Special thanks to Lital Malad. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Julie in Daytona Beach, Florida, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.